It's the Hebrew day is going to be Yudbet. Yudbet Adar. Tavshin Pei. And Goyish date, March 8th, 2020. The topic is, was Daryavish the son of Esther? Okay. Now, we'll give Bernie a minute to come back. Yeah, it's okay? I remember him. Take 1, 2, 3 sheets. Okay. Some of these topics we've done before, but I'm doing today from a totally different angle. Today the goal is to understand how Medrash develops, the way I understand how Medrash develops. It's also going to deal with a very key educational issue about how to teach Midrash, and how to appreciate, how to teach, and when to teach, and pretty much the... what happens when historical statements made by Chazal don't match up with outside history, which we have nowadays, thanks to archaeology, we have the ability to find out about ancient history a lot better than we ever had before. Now, I'll begin with a couple questions. I'll go with the title. How many people learned during their Jewish studies that Daryavish, the Persian king, was the son of Esther?
Which Daryavish?
Any Daryavish. Okay. Right, who learned that? Most of you? Okay, now, and who taught it to you? Somewhere, the same people told you that David couldn't build a base of Mikdash because he had blood on his hands. Mm-hmm. Or things like that. And the same people told you that, who built the second temple? Well, what's his name? Who built Beit Sheni? Ezra, right? Who learned that? Who learned that Ezra built the second temple? There's not one source for that. No. In fact, you're seeing the opposite all the time. Means built. Like, Yidei Bruvel Yisduah Tabayit Hazeh. That's what Tanakh says. And you're seeing Ketz Bruvel Zerubbabel, the Ketz Shebe Moshati. And Tanakh says over and over again, Zerubbabel was the one who built it. When Ezra came, the temple was there already. I'm saying, there's certain things everyone just says, like the same people would say that Dvarim is a review of Chumash, a review of the first four books. It's just not true. Everyone just says it. So... And there's a reason why everyone just says it, because it's based on something, because in the book of Ezra, it talks about the second temple being rebuilt. So it's a logical mistake to make, because the book of Ezra talks about the second temple being rebuilt. So people say Ezra built it. Now, they can say Bimei Ezra of Nehemiah, during the time period. That makes sense. But it doesn't say Ezra. There's not one source that Ezra built it. And says it's actually the opposite.
Was it actually started after 70
We're going to talk about that a lot, yeah. Now, what's the problem? Why? Because no one studies the book of Ezra Nehemiah. Almost nobody. A couple of schools are finally getting back into the curriculum. In my opinion, it's one of the most important books to study nowadays. But in all of our Jewish education, we never sit and just read it like a book. Just let it read. And when that happens, when Chazal make midrashic statements about details in that book, we take them literally instead of midrashically, instead of thematically. And then what happens is when you start taking Midrash like Pshat, then you destroy the Midrash and destroy the Pshat. And everything gets ruined. So I want to start from basics and go through first the book of Ezra to understand what the book is about, to see the story of Purim in light of our sources, in light of outside sources, and try to understand the Midrash in light of that. I think it's a logical approach, isn't it? My assumption is two things. Is that when Chazal make Midrashic interpretations and comments on Megillat Esther, they're assuming that their audience knows the book of Ezra Nehemiah and has this fickle common sense. Okay? I think it's a logical thing. I'm also going to make a big...
You'll have to learn it in order to know it.
I'm saying when the statements were originally made, it was made for an audience who was learned. The fact that people nowadays don't, they didn't have Nevuah because they were Chachamim, they weren't Nevim. They didn't know that people in the future wouldn't study the books. They would just read Midrashim. It could be. Anyway, I'll explain what I'm getting at. There was something else. What was the reason? What was the reason why Ahasuerus made that party in the 30th year of his reign? What was he celebrating? What'd you learn?
The fact that there was no return to Israel.
There was no return, or the temple wasn't built, or something like that. Yeah, something like
that. The Nebuah wasn't completed.
Yeah, the Yom Yerushalayim wasn't completed. So he was so happy, and he made a big for 180 days for all the army of Parasim died. That's what they're celebrating. Now, anyone who takes that literally, nothing I can, you know what I'm saying? I can't help them. You follow? It just doesn't make sense at all. if you want to take anything literally. Why would the... And the king Ahasuerus exists in outside history. And we have his palace, we have his... everything about him. Tons and tons of literature about him. The wars he fought. And the armies he grouped together. Yeah. And it doesn't play anywhere. There's no logic of him worrying about you. Am Yisrael couldn't care less about what Yirmiyahu said. Remember? Never read his book? Everyone hated him. And no one believed a word he said. They called him, they accused him of being a Navi Sheker. They put him worse than Kharim, they tried to kill him. They put him on trial for Navi Sheker. And they blamed the Korban on him. So Ahasuerus is worried about him? No. What are Chazal doing? I want to show you. Chazal, everywhere they can, they're throwing Yirmiyahu into Amigilat Esther. For example, we have this minhag. There's two reasons for it. V'kelim mikelim shonim, we read like Echa. You know the one reason? You know, for the Litvax? Yeah, so Litvax have a little simcha. So we do. And then you know, the big question is, so why don't we read the whole thing like Echa? It would be stolulus. That would be, you know, that would be overdoing it. So we just do. Never heard that one? That's a noble one. Okay. The hopefully someone was offended. But seriously, why do we read Kelim Mikelim Shonim? Why do we read that way? What's the Medrash about? The Gemara Megillah asked a question. Why were we almost destroyed? Remember? Laman Nidchavus Sonim Shay Yisrael, that's Lashon Sagi Nahar. Why we were almost destroyed in that generation? What were we doing wrong? We went to the party and we ate off of what Kelim? The Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, right? Remember? And which is, I call, that's a misdemeanor, if I understand the word correctly. We have a lawyer. Misdemeanor is worse, it's easier than a felony. You don't go to jail for a misdemeanor. Correct? Memory, yeah. But for a felony, that's something else. No. But what's, if you eat from the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, what's that mean? What's that an expression of?
Disrespect.
Like, if I have to fix a light bulb and I take, three, what do you call it? Three masechtas of Shas, you know, big heavy books. And step on them to fix the light bulb. What's that show? Either it's Sakhar Safashis or something like that, or that's a lack of respect for the books. I'll take Kugel's book instead. I'm just joking. I'll take a secular book. I won't take a Sifrei Kodesh. Now, back to Chumash. I want to begin with an example from Kelim Mikelim Shonim. I'll start from the book of Ezra. It's the first source. I'd rather you see in your Tanakh, but look in the first source. Everyone, I hope, has seen this before. But from the first Perek of Ezra. Just, I want to make sure you have your history right. What foreign power destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash? The Babylonians. And who was their king and leader? Nebuchadnezzar and his general Nebuchadnezzar. And that happened. And the 11th year of Zedekiah was Korban Bayit Rishon. There were two waves of exile, weren't there? The first wave of exile was 11 years before the Korban, what we call Galus Tichonia. We mumble it in the Megillah, don't we? Yeah. And then, no, that's not the 10 tribes. The 10 tribes is 100 years earlier by Ashur. But the, and 11 years later, then Nebuchadnezzar comes back in, and then they destroy the Mikdash and the rest of the people go into exile. I'm assuming you're familiar with that. The Babylonians are ruling the land of Israel. They move other populations from other countries they conquered to Israel, and they move the Jews to Babylonia. That was the policy both of the Assyrians and also the Babylonians. Approximately 7 years later, the Persians defeat the Babylonians. But there's one little event that happens beforehand. Before the Persians, before Koresh defeats the Babylonians, there's a king of Madai. You've heard of Madai? There's Parasu Madai. Medai is M-E-D-E. Mead, Medai, it's a little, wherever it is. Somewhere in, a little north, I think, a little north of Iran. And there's a king named Daryavesh, Ben Achashverosh, right, who first takes over, or starts conquest of Babel, and then Koresh comes the next year and finishes off the job. Where's the source for that? Open up Daniel Perek Tet. Should still be there. There's something very confusing about the names here, because the names repeat themselves a lot. What? In Sefer Daniel? Daniel Perek Tet.
What page is that?
It's right after Perek Tet. What? 12, do you have numbers on that one? Okay. Then he has right before Ezra and Nehemiah. Terry, read it. Read Perek Tet, the first line. No. Who can see? Who can read with that? Oh, Dayavish ben Achashverosh. That's the title, isn't it?
Ah,
there we go. That's not Paras, that's Medai. Asher
Humlach.
Humlach
al Malchut Kasdim.
Malchut Kasdim is the Chaldeans or the Babylonians. They're like their neighbors, or they're different names for them, remember? Kasdim are the Chaldeans. They're the big astronomers, like they were Mumchin in astronomy and stuff like that. But that's the same as the Bablim. Got it? So what do we see from here? The Babylonians are first conquered or start taking over by Dayavesh ben Achashverosh Hamadai. Every Parshan on the spot says that's not our Achashverosh, it's not our Dayavesh. You follow? That's an earlier one. The next year is when Koresh comes. Because Daniel wasn't living in the time of... this is the final years of Dayavesh. But what's he saying? Look what he says next.
Ishnat achat lemalcho, ani Daniel binoti vasvarim mispar hashanim, asher yad var Hashem al Yirmiyahu hanavi limalot lechorvot Yerushalayim
shivim shana. Ah, he said, oh my gosh, there's an historical event, almost like the Balfour Declaration. But something happened, the British took over, right? Something's going on here, and Daniel says, hey, maybe what? Maybe Yirmiyahu's nevuah is coming true. If it's true, what does he need to do? Think like a Zionist for a minute. We'll make fun of them today. What? If Yirmiyahu's nevuah is coming true, what should every Jew in Galus do? Yeah, that's what a Zionist would say. But Daniel knows Yirmiyahu. You know what Yirmiyahu says? What we do when the 7 years are over? Before you go back to Israel, you have to daven. And guess what Daniel's going to do? Read just 2-3 lines, because we know we quote this from Tachman all the time. And every Monday and Thursday we mumble these psukim. Most of them. Just read 2 more lines. What happened to Gibor? Know the Gemara Prophet, right? Continue, yeah. That's a perfect mistake. That's good. That okay. The rest is in Tachlin. We quote from this left and right on Monday and Thursday, right? Why is he davening? Because he knows Yirmiyahu. Because what did Yirmiyahu predict? What did they teach you? Yirmiyahu. Everyone knows Yirmiyahu 70 years. Achashverosh knew about it, right? You must know about it. What would Yirmiyahu say about what happened after 70 years? Don't be afraid. You've heard of Yirmiyahu 70 years. What's going to happen after 70 years, according to almost everybody? The Beis HaMikdash shall be rebuilt. One opinion, like, there'll be 7 years of Horban, or the other 7 years of exile. Correct? That's what you're always taught? Again, no source for that. I mean, there's a source for that, but it's a misunderstood source. Yirmiyahu didn't say that. Yirmiyahu said something totally different. Yirmiyahu said, in the fourth year of Yehoiakim, okay, that in year 4 of Yehoiakim, he says, if you don't do proper tshuva, because you haven't done proper tshuva, I've been yelling at you for the last 23 years about doing tshuva, now that you didn't, what's your punishment? The Babylonians are taking over the Middle East. And he calls Nebuchadnezzar my Eved. Remember Moshe Rabbeinu was Eved Hashem? So is Nebuchadnezzar. In what way? He doesn't realize it, but God is telling Am Yisrael that the reason why Nebuchadnezzar is coming into power, the Babylonians are powerful, he's the instrument of my thing. Just like Hoyashur Shevet Api, that Yeshua was talking about, God's bringing Ashur to punish the 10 tribes, the most of Yehuda, 100 years earlier, for not listening to Yeshua. God's bringing Nebuchadnezzar because they didn't listen to Yirmiyahu. It's black and white in Yirmiyahu. It's in Perek Hafei. Well, I guess if you look surprised, we'll have to see it inside. Now, what could they do? Yirmiyahu's goal is not to predict the Korban. His goal is to prevent the Korban. But he tells the people, in order to prevent the Korban, what do you need to do? Don't fight the Babylonians. What do you do instead? Give in. And that's your punishment. You lost your sovereignty. That's it. You're in rehab at home. You're being quarantined at home, and you'll be run by the Babylonians. Now, if you dare to rebel against the Babylonians, you're going to be in big trouble, because God's not going to help you. You can daven all you want. That's what Yirmiyahu is screaming. He tells Yirmiyahu, don't daven for them. And 3 years after the Babylonians come in, In the third, like the Babylonians. Just take a quick look in Yirmiyahu Perek Chafei. You see what he's talking about? Because you guys look a little surprised.
It's not a Haftorah.
Yirmiyahu Chafei is the only double date in Tanakh, and all biblical dating is anchored on Yirmiyahu Perek Chafei Pasuk Aleph. Because we have a date. It says it's the fourth year of Yehoiakim, who's second to last king, Yoshiel's son. And which is the first year of Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. You see that? And then you can scan a little bit. And what's Yirmiyahu saying? I've been yelling at you for the last 23 years, since the 13th year of Yoshiel. That's when the book began. I've been yelling at you, fix your ways. Return to God. Serve Him properly. And you haven't been listening. You think you've been fine, but you haven't been. And therefore, He gives 8 psukim. 7 psukim of rebuke. Of telling, you haven't listened to me. And look in Pasachet. Lachain. Therefore, what's going to happen? I'm going to call Nebuchadnezzar Melech Abdi, and I'm going to put him in charge of the whole Middle East. And look in Pasuk Yud Bet, we're going to serve him for how many years? For 70 years. And after 70 years, I'll punish him for what he did wrong. And that. Now, he explains what he's talking about in Perek Chaf Zayin later on. Yirmiyahu goes around with yokes. Remember, to tell the people to put yourself under the yoke of Bavel. He did it during the reign of Joachim. He does it again under Tzidkiyahu. Because when Nebuchadnezzar comes in, when Joachim rebels, and Nebuchadnezzar comes in to put down the rebellion, Joachim is killed probably somewhere there. His son Joachim takes over, and things get really bad. Joachim finally gives up and puts up a white flag, and saves the city by surrendering. That's in the 11th year of Joachim, which is after 3 months of Jehoiachin. He surrenders. And what did the Babylonians do because we surrendered? They sent away into exile. Yechezkel goes into that exile. Kish, you know who Kish was? Mordechai's great-grandfather? You'll read about that tomorrow night. He goes into exile. Remember him? Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish? Ashur go. Kish? Yeah. He's the one who goes into exile. And then who else goes? And then Tzidkiyahu is a vassal king appointed by the Babylonians. His name was actually Matanya. But when he was put in charge as a puppet king, they renamed him Tzidkiyahu, because Yirmiyahu said, because you have to do Mishpat and Staka. That's what he's screaming. And had Tzidkiyahu not rebelled, would have been fine. In the fourth year of Tzidkiyahu, they're starting to talk already about rebellion. In the fifth year of Tzidkiyahu, they start the rebellion. All the false prophets are saying, yeah, go for it. There'll be this rebellion. And they'll be and say, oh, come in. Yeah. There'll be this rebellion. And all the false prophets are saying, you know, go for it and God help us. Everyone's praying to God. And Yirmiyahu says, God's not going to help you. That's half of Yirmiyahu. And Yirmiyahu tells them, give in to Bavel and don't fight them. If you give in, you can stay in your land. If you don't give in, it's over. They don't listen. Nebuzadran, the general, comes in, puts down the rebellion in the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu. It starts with the siege in the 9th year. And that's Churban Bayit Rishon. Got it? 11. That's the events, for sure. What did Yirmiyahu predict? Yirmiyahu predicted that Babylonia will be in charge for 70 years. And if you don't accept them, you'll go into exile. Now, what's going to happen after 70 years? Yirmiyahu in Perek Chaf Tet sends a famous letter to the exile, telling the people, like, once they go into exile, build houses, settle down. Take a look in Yirmiyahu Chaf Tet. It's going to be source B in a minute. Look in Yirmiyahu Perek Chaf Tet. It's a famous letter that Yirmiyahu sends. After with Galut Hoyachin, it's almost like right out of the Megillah with the way it's introduced. Yirmiyahu sends a letter in Perek Chaf Tet to the Gola, the only Nevo of Yirmiyahu that Am Yisrael is makpi to keep. Especially in Tinek, I'll be mean for a minute. Okay. Remember what Yirmiyahu says?
Coming back.
No, he didn't say you're coming back. He says you're not coming. He says keep your hopes down. You're not going. The false prophets are saying you're coming back in 2 years.
Okay.
He sends a letter. Look, just skip to Pasuk Dalet. What's saying in the letter? Kol Mar Hashem. B'nu v'tim v'shevu, right? Settle down, build houses. Yeah. Now the false prophets are saying, there's no emunah there. What do you mean build houses in Bavel? It's like printing hardcover kinnis books. Remember when you grew up, there was no such thing as a hardcover kinnis book? Unheard of. How can you even think of doing something like that? To make a hardcover kinnis book? Nowadays there's what it called. Other things are override. But Yirmiyahu was saying something unheard of. That's why they send letters, you should kill this guy for writing things like this. Where's his emunah? So he says, build houses, set things, and get weddings, have children, settle down, even pray for the welfare of that kingdom.
Live normal.
Just live normal. Why? And now read in Pasuk Yod. What's it say? Read from that's on the source sheet now. In Pasuk Yod, in source B. Kichol Mahashem, Kilifi Lemod Bavel Shivim Shana, Efkoretchem, Vakimoti Alechem Edvreyatov, Lashivetchem Lechem Azeh. Because after 70 years, I'll bring not, you're not coming back in a year or two like the false prophets are saying. That was Hananiah ben Azur. All the false prophets in Yerushalayim and in Bethel were saying the worst is over. We're coming back in a year or two. It's no, that's not happening that way. And don't rebel. They don't listen. Yirmiyahu says after 7 years of Babylonian rule, what'll happen? I'll remember and I'll bring you back. But and there's no point in coming back if you're not ready. And therefore, look how he continues in Pasuk Yod Bet. וקראתם אותי והלכתם, והתפללתם אליי ושמעתי אליכם, וביקשתם אותי ומצאתם כי דרשוני בכל לבבכם, והנשאתי לכם מיום השם, ושבתי את שפותכם, וקיבצתי אתכם מן הגויים, מכל מקום אשר הדחתי אתכם שמה, ואשיבו אתכם על הקמה אשר הגליתי אתכם שמה. What's in real promising? For 7 years, there's nowhere to go. Sit, learn, settle down. After 7 years, I'll give you an opportunity, but there's no point in returning unless you do what? You want to return. It makes sense if you're in rehab until the rehab's over. Who knew this Nevuah? Daniel. Now Daniel makes sense? Because Daniel realizes there's a historical opportunity, but redemption's a two-way street. And therefore, what's Daniel doing? He's davening. First, he's admitting, oh, we've been terrible. God's right. He's doing, see that, God, you were right. And we were wrong. But now we have an opportunity. Listen to our prayers and help bring us back. Trying to say we're ready. That's exactly his tefillah.
But it didn't happen, right?
No, but it did happen.
Chagai is Chagai. The Jewish people did not, in fact, do tshuva. They did not want to go back to Eretz Yisrael.
Most of them did, but some of them did. A couple of B'nai Kiva kids came.
Right.
Yeah. So, maybe Tamidi Abesh came, things like that.
Again, look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu restored the Mikdash, even though the majority of the people...
No, we'll see. We'll talk about it. We'll see. That's what I'm getting at. That's the background to Megillat. This background is key to understanding Megillat Esther. And when Megillat Esther is written, the author of Megillah is aware of this, and all the Midrashim are aware of this. But the people reading the Midrashim don't learn this. You'll see why we don't learn it in a minute. Now go to Source A, which is the first time in the book of Ezra. Bishlat echad b'koresh melech paras, l'chlov dar shem epir Yirmiyahu. Koresh that we have in the British Museum, we have this, you know, you heard of the Koresh cylinder?
Yeah,
we've seen it. It's a real thing. And actually, he talks about his conquest of Babel. And thanks to who? Thanks to what God did Koresh, was Koresh able to conquer Babel? That God's name is Marduk. It's Mepharish. It's in, you know, it's in written in whatever cuneiform it's in. But he's thanking Marduk, the God of Babylonians, who was more than happy to welcome the Persians because the God of the Babylonians, Marduk, hated the Babylonians for the way they behaved. And he's bringing in Koresh. What Koresh changed his policy, unlike the Babylonians who exiled the people who they conquered. The Persians changed that policy 180 degrees, and they let all the ethnic groups that were exiled by the Babylonians return to their homelands and be good Persian subjects in their own homelands. And it worked. For hundreds of years, they were a great empire. Because they gave people ethnic identity, religious freedom, just pay your taxes and be good Persian citizens. And they were, the Persians were much nicer to the people than the Babylonians, and that's why they lasted a lot longer. They built a massive empire. Now, that event, where Koresh is saying, you know, in the name of Marduk, one of the nations allowed to return was the Jewish people. But now that's with a lot of people. What's the Navi say? That's not Marduk. Who is that? And that's not Koresh? That's God using Koresh. Notice that. Now, the first line alludes to that. It says, Heir Hashem Etruach Koresh. God was behind that event. And so let the Jews build the Mikdash. The Navi who says that explicitly, you know who that is? And to recognize that an historical event like the Koresh declaration, right, is a hand of God that should require a Navi, if there's a Navi around. Now, where in our Navim do we have a Navi who says Koresh's act is really God, and God sent Koresh? Okay. That's what they call Deutero-Isaiah. You know, you realize in Isaiah there's two sections, there's two famous sections. There's the first 35 chapters, which is Yeshayahu from the time of Hizkiyahu. Then there's a little historical appendix about, you know, Hizkiel and the miracle at the end. And then starting in chapter 40 in Perek Mem of Yeshayahu, it's a whole new topic called Nechama. Remember? Nechamu Nechamu Ami? And in, I don't want to say academic circles, but even in religious circles, it's clear it's a new topic. Now, exactly what it is, it could be that Isaiah in his great wisdom saw what's going to happen 200 years later. But it could also be that Chazal added on to the original Isaiah, an appendix of when his nevuot of Perek Aleph were finally fulfilled. But that a topic in itself. We're not going to talk about. But I want to show you. I'm assuming that Yeshayahu, what we call the nevuot of Nechama, where God's saying, it's not saying I'm going to redeem you in the future. He's saying I'm doing it right now. It's in real time. And Yeshayahu is going to say there in Perek Mem, in the end of Mem Daled, he's going to say, that's not Koresh, that's me. But Koresh doesn't realize it. And he's going to say, I'm telling you what's going on now. God's trying to, the Navi is trying to inspire the Jewish people. It's time to come back. He's giving a rabbi speech to do something. Look at these historical events. God's behind them. And don't think it's just political and Koresh is nothing. That God's promise made by Yirmiyahu of returning you is happening. But you have to do your side. So look in Yeshayahu Mem Daled. Look towards the end. Yeshayahu Mem Daled. Who's my reader? Yes, you have it? The end of Mem Daled, like six lines before the end. It's got to be a Komarsha somewhere there. Mem Daled, starting from Zechar Eile Yaakov. Evan, Pasach Hav Aleph.
Zechar Eile Yaakov, Yisrael, Ki Adi Ata Yisrael Ticha, Evan Li Ata, Yisrael, Lo...
Tinasheni. What's he saying? You're still chosen, you're still serving me. The Nebi is saying, remember Yaakov, you're still my chosen people, don't abandon me. Remember Tinasheni, like Menashe? He says, don't abandon me. One more line. What's God saying? I'm willing to start a whole new slate. But machite means wipe away. Remember Michias HaMalek? That's not wiping out, that's wiping off. That's a different shear. That's awesome. You follow? You can't wipe out HaMalek because it's always there. You wipe it, you have to clean it every couple generations. You follow? That's a different topic. It's not wipe out, it's wipe off. Like umachit umachashem dima me'akol panim, it's wiping away tears, isn't it? You know that song, don't you? Before the flood, what's God saying? Umachit yit kol ha'yikum me'apnei adama. I'm going to wipe. The earth is still there, but I got to wipe off those evil that evil civilization and start again. Now back to here. So God's saying, I'm giving you new a chance. I know you did bad, but I'm willing to start over again, give you a fresh start. It's Yom Kippur. I think we even quote that on Yom Kippur, don't we? For good reason, because that's exactly the concept of Yom Kippur. I'm giving you, learn from your mistakes, I'm giving you a new start. Continue.
Ranu shemayim ki asad Adonai harir tachtiyot aretz, pitzku harim rinah, ya'av kol etzbo, ki ga'alel Adonai Yaakov, v'Yisrael yitfah.
God, I'm redeeming you now, God's saying. Right? I want you to glorify me. God's calling, this is the Geulah, it's the real thing. Wake up and recognize it. Okay, continue. I'm the only God and I'm the one who's redeeming you. Continue. Okay, that's a famous line, right? There's, I'm the one behind everything, so don't listen to all these other people who think they're smart. Continue.
Mekim
Dvar Avdo. What's that? He's fulfilling the Dvar Avdo, is what Yirmiyahu said. God's fulfilling his promise to Yirmiyahu. Continue. I'm going to return Amisol to Yerushalayim and fix up the city. Like he promised. Like Yirmiyahu promised in his name. Continue. The same God who did Kriyas Yamsuf, you know, and dried up who did all the miracles coming out of Egypt, is doing what now? Koresh is my shepherd, and he's going to fulfill all my desires, what I want to do. Continue. Now the next line, Perek Mem Hei. I'm the one sending. Now he says it before Koresh. That's not Koresh, that's me. Continue.
Ani.
I'm the one leading Koresh. Got it?
V'hadurim ayasher latot nechusha ashaber uvrichei varzel agadeya.
He's quoting Tehillim Kuf Zayin, isn't he? We stay on Yom Ha'atzmaut. No, Kiddin Kuf Zayin, Hurul Hashem, what do you call it? Arba Chaim, Korban Todah.
Say it too fast.
Okay, but that's his quoting right out of there. Continue. Listen carefully. Why is God doing this? Leman?
Leman teda ki ani Adonai hakarei b'shimcha Elohei Yisrael. Leman avdi Yaakov Yisrael b'chiri v'akrau lecha b'shimcha achancha v'loi
datecha. I'm doing this all for the sake of my people Israel. I'm calling you by name. I'm saying it's you. Right? And you don't even know who I am. What do you want more than that? Got it? But what's the Navi screaming? He's telling Am Yisrael and Bavel, Koresh is God. That's not Koresh, that's God. And God's calling upon you to return. That's the big call to come. What's God expecting? What would you expect if you were God? Look what God did for his people. He got rid of the Babylonians. He brought in the Persians. He gives the Persians a change of policy. We have an opportunity to return. What should Am Yisrael be doing?
Returning.
Now imagine how God would feel if after all that they don't return. What would it be like? It would be like, let's say there's a big king who wants to show off how great he is. Makes a big party, shows off how great he is. And to show off his beauty, he tells his trophy wife to come and show off. No, I won't say her name. And show off how beautiful he is, to show how great he is. And you can't do things like nowadays because that's mistreating. No, that's not a nice way of treating women nowadays. That's not a sign of, having a beautiful wife is not a sign that you're president or anything like that. It's not a sign of power. But back then, it was a sign, look how great I am. This is. And imagine if she doesn't want to come. Whoa. If he calls upon his wife to come to show off how great he is, and she doesn't come, wouldn't he be upset? What did Memuchan say? It wasn't just Vashti hurting the king. She's going to set a precedent for other people, right? What am I quoting? This is a Megillah, you should know, right? Lobach Elohan. On all the nations, right? And well, let's say, if Vashti doesn't listen, Kavachomer, we're not going to listen. There'll be no authority or anything. And therefore, what do we have to make? An edict that every nation should speak in their language. Right? What's that coming from? That makes no sense at all, doesn't it? But it's in the Megillah. That's the question, is that first story alluding to something? Or it could be just, a cute little story. Now, you can't take that story too far because, if you take that analogy too far, you end up with Christianity. So we have to hide a couple of things there. But in the analogy, there's something going on. Now, it's a difficult message. Some people might want to even hide a message like that because it's pretty harsh. So sometimes you have to hide. It's called, when you hide things, it's called obfuscation. There's hiding things so people don't find it. There's hiding things so you have to look for it to find it. It's called religion. I mean, it's called Nistar, if you know your Kabbalah. There's Nigla and Nistar. It's a much higher level to find God without a miracle than through a miracle. Like Shirat David, Chazal says, a higher level than Shirat Hayam. Because it's a no-brainer to sing Shirat Hayam after sing Kriyas Yam Suf. To sing Shirat David, after winning battles in normal ways, that's a higher... To be able to see God through nature, without the need of miracles, Kriyas Yam Suf is like a jump start. He started.
That's Malbim and Tzidkos Kahar
Eyal. It's also a half of Tanakh. The same thing. It's the same idea where you. It's the whole idea of the. That's what God's training us in the desert to do. That's in Yeshua where we're weaning ourselves from miracles. The idea is to find God without the miracles. Now let's go back to where we began. So go back now to source A. So again, in the book of Ezra, at the beginning, way back in the first year of Koresh, God did all this. And Koresh said, God gave me all these things and let me build a Mikdash. Pasuk Gimel. Mibachem b'chol amo yelav imo v'yalu Yerushalayim asher b'yudah v'yiven et beit Hashem Elohei Yisrael hu elim asher b'yushalayim b'chol nisham kamat asher gar shem yasu anshim mekomo. Koresh knows his Jewish people. He says, anyone who wants to make aliyah can go back, and anyone who doesn't, what should they do? Send money. And that's what happened.
How come he has to say here, which is in Yehuda?
What?
Well, how come he has to be in the Pasuk?
Because that's the name of the province.
I'm saying, who he's speaking to, wouldn't everybody know where Yerushalayim is?
No, but it's an official statement of the Persian Empire. Because there's the Yerushalayim and Shushan also. You see. Mm-hmm. It's one in Muncie. Okay. There was one in Berlin. Now, I'm not making it up. What? Now, remember what Chazal say about the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash? Look at the next line. V'amelech Koresh, himself, Hotzid klei Beit Hashem, asher hotzid nevuchadnezzar Yerushalayim v'itnem b'Beit Elohav, v'yotzim Koresh melech paras, ay demitrudat ha-gizbar, v'isprem l'shes patzar nesei b'Yehuda. as a gesture of goodwill, what does Koresh do? He goes into Nebuchadnezzar's palace that he captured. Nebuchadnezzar in his palace had a vault with all the kelim in the Beit HaMikdash that he took out of Yerushalayim, and he gave them back to the Jews, use it in good health. Because he wants them to build the Mikdash, he wants the Jews to pray for him. That was his policy. So according to that, the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash are where? In the time of Koresh? They're back with the Jews in Yerushalayim. Now, according to everybody, Ahasuerus is a Persian king, isn't he? It says so. He's definitely Melech Paras, and he's after Koresh, for sure. That's not one Parshan says anything different than that. Okay? Now, how far after Koresh is, that we'll talk about later. And when Chazal say that we're using Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, and that's the reason why God's so angry with us, that is a Midrashic statement. Because what does Chazal assume? That you read the book of Ezra, and you know this fact, and the Kelim are really where? Back in Yerushalayim. But the fact that the Jews are still in Shushan, enjoying the party, what's that mean? What don't they care about? They don't care about the Beit HaMikdash, because if they did, they'd be there. How do you reflect that? By a misdemeanor of eating from the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, when they're committing a felony from God's point of view. Is that my point? The way I understand that Midrash is not an historical one, but rather a thematic one, which is harsh. It's super harsh, isn't it?
Why couldn't some of the kelim be left behind?
That's the answer they give. That's some parshim say that. The mikdash kelim. Pasuk Zayin Nechet. In Ezra Perek Aleph. And source A.
Where did he put them? In his own temple?
Nebuchadnezzar put them in his temple. Koresh took over Nebuchadnezzar's palace. Doesn't need them. He's got plenty of other stuff. As a gesture to the Jews, he gives them the kelim to bring back. Because he wants the Jews to go back and build a temple. That's comma. It should be one pasuk. It's a comma there. And then Koresh took those out. The kelim that Nebuchadnezzar put in his palace from the Beit HaMikdash, Koresh took them out of Nebuchadnezzar's palace and gave it to the Jews to bring back.
What Beit Elohav did the Jews have to put it into at that time? Wasn't the temple destroyed?
No, no. He gave it to the Jews to go back to build their temple.
He put it in their possession. But
he gave it to them. He gave it to them to bring back.
It didn't go into a Beit Elohim of the Jews.
No, no. He said the Nebuchadnezzar put it in the vault of his God. Right? And then he took it, and Koresh took it out of his vault and gave it to the Jews.
Gave it to them.
Yeah, gave it to them to use to build in their temple.
Do we have any other record as to who the personal recipients of this material?
It says Sheshbazar, who gives it to the Gizbar. There's the show treasurer who's in charge of it. They count everything. And it's that way there's, what's the word? Accountability. And if you read later in Ezra, there's tons of accountability. When Ezra makes Aliyah, there's the whole committee in charge of all the money that they give him. Yeah.
How could this be the first year of Koresh's reign? Doesn't he first conquer Madai before he conquers Babel?
No. That's why Dariavish Hamadi, Ben Achashvero, Dariavish Hamadi, he started Asher Humlach Al Kasdim, and Koresh comes the next year and takes over everything. Maybe it's the second year of Koresh. It's the first time Koresh took over everything. Because first Koresh took over Madai, and then all everything that Madai had taken over.
So it's not really the first year of his reign, it's the first year of his reign over.
Over everything, yeah. Because he was king, if you go to the outside years, it's like he was in Paras for a couple of years, and then he took over Madai, and then took over all Paras and Madai and Babel and everything.
The reference to Dariavish ben Achashverosh is where?
Chapter 9 in Daniel. But all the Parshim, that's an earlier. It was a popular name among the Medes like a popular name. It's a royal name, like Bush and Kennedy and stuff like that. Names repeat themselves. Now, back to the British. I'm sorry, remember? There's Henry the. You know, there's royal names are repeated. Now, so they come back, and what happens? That's why Daniel's davening. But when they come back, not much happens because it's not much of a return. Most people stay behind. And then, when they come back, they build a Mizbeach, the details in the book of Ezra. They start working on the temple, they get funds going, and then there's an intifada. Why? Because the local population, who's in Yerushalayim, were brought in by the Babylonians and the Assyrians earlier, they've been there for the last, half a century, and they don't like these new Jews coming, and they don't want to, they have their rights. And the Jews start building and say, hey, we don't want you here. Unless we want, if you want to build it, we have to do this all together. And they get into a big fight with Zerubbabel. And Zerubbabel says, no, this is a Jewish project, you can't join us. And they get into a fight, and the local population sends letters to the Babylonian authorities, to the Persian authorities, to stop the building. And all those letters are recorded in chapters 4, 5, and 6 of Ezra. They're in Aramaic. You can read the English or read the Aramaic. It's a famous set of letters. They're saying, don't trust the Jews. They're going to rebel. They rebelled against the Babylonians. They made promises and they broke them. It's like classic BDS. What? And then APAC was sending letters back. No, trust the Jews. We're loyal to you and everything like that.
Yeah.
And finally, there's an 18-year building freeze we'll see about in a minute. And after 18 years, finally there's a new administration in Persia. Koresh fell, another king fell. And then after 18 years, after the building freeze, the Jews have a chance to build again. That's in the second year of Dayavesh. That's going to be... It's all written. Now look...
And where were the Kaelin re-roll?
They're back in Yerushalayim. They'll be collecting dust somewhere.
In what?
They built... there was a Mizbeach they had. Whoever did.
So they had some kind of building that had the Kaelin of the Mizbeach.
Some guy was in charge, but it was collecting dust. The people were... Just read Haggai. The people were down and depressed and because it's not happening. You know the guys who made Aliyah and felt so bad? Most people didn't, because they said, this isn't redemption. And sure enough, it wasn't. They come back and everything fizzled out. And they're all, you see, they're mamish down and depressed. Haggai talks about this. Remember, Haggai and Zechariah only are in the second year of Dayavesh, which is like 20 years later. The only Navi in the time of Koresh is what we call Deuter Isaiah. But it's an important Navi, because you need a Navi to tell Amisro what to do. I don't understand why people are against putting what they call Deuter Isaiah when it belongs. That's exactly what prophecy is. It's shaping history, not predicting history. The job of the Navi is to make things happen, not to see what's... There's no point in Navi predicting events hundreds of years in the future. We're not soothsayers, that's Avodah Zarah. The job of the Navi is to shape history, to fulfill the goal. Not what Navim don't say what will be, what can be. And that's the most important... It's like a rabbi's speech. It's a rabbi leading the people to make things happen. That's the job of a Navi. He's sent by God to inspire people. What? And rabbi in a modern sense of a... Not a Kohen being Paskin. I'm talking about a show rabbi giving guidance, like the way our first act used to be. I'm talking about a rabbi who leads a community, not a Paskin Shilas. Got my point? There's a Navi and there's a Kohen. The Kohen has to know what the halach is, what's kosher, what's not kosher. There's a Navi who's giving guidance and telling and giving Musar what to fix and things like that. Now back to go look in source C. Okay. Right, and they have the big fight. Pasuk Dalet. Got it? That's the building freeze. Now, we can calculate later on, that's 18 years between them. From outside history and from Tanakh history, you can calculate. From the first year of Koresh, the second year of Dayavish is 18 years. Okay? And then, in Pasuk Vav, it's really strange. It says, what happened in the reign of Achashverosh? There was also a hate letter about the Jews. When did that happen? It's totally unclear. You agree? Is this Achashverosh or Achashverosh? Unclear. Is he after Dayavesh or is he between Koresh and Dayavesh? Totally unclear. It's intentionally unclear. We'll see. And that ends the Parshiyat in Yitzhak. Then we go to Aramaic and we have the letters going back and forth. Until the end of Perek Vav. Flip the page over. Just skip to F. No, wait, before, and just take a quick look in Haggai, in D and E. Just in the same second year of Dayavesh. When they start building again, that's a famous line in Haggai. Look in Pasuk Bet. Indeed, the people are saying they've given up hope, and Zechariah tells them, get to work, and that's why things are bad. If you work harder, things will be great again. And then he says Jerusalem will be great again, or make Jerusalem great again. In Perek Bet Pasuk Bet, Kedoyek for the Beit Hazachron Min Arishon, Makom Zaytin Kavodam Hashem. Haggai is saying, yes, it can happen, but you got to get to work. And sure enough, remember on Hanukkah that year, on Chav Daled Kislev, they break ground on the temple. We did that, sure, I'm sure. But that's the roots of Hanukkah. But that's when things start moving. And that's going to be, that's a big hope. And sure enough, they break ground in the second year of Dayavesh, and they finish when? So that's going to be source F. And then Zechariah is also saying about, what do you call it? Shat Yushan Barachamim, Biti Ibaneba. That's the pasuk we quote in Shmoneh Esrei every day. It's from the second year of Dariavash and Zecharia. In Pasuk Tet Zayin. Remember? V'tishkon b'tochech kasher dibarta. Remember, Roni v'simcha batzion ki nibav v'shechanti b'tochech? We read on Hanukkah. That's all Zecharia from the second year of Dariavash. And there's big hopes. And sure enough, it takes 4 years. They finish building in year 6. And that's at the end of chapter 6 in Ezra. It's in Aramaic, but the Shebe Yehuda are coming back with the help of the guidance of the Navi Haggai and Zechariah. And the people build with the help of Am Yisrael and also with the help of Koresh's original thing and Dayavish allowing to build in the letters with Artachasta. And then, V'sheitza Baita Denad Adyom Tata Li'er Chadar Dishnat Sheit Le'machut Dayavish HaMelech. And then they make Chanukah Tabait in Adar. Gimbal Adar, 6th year, they finish. What should happen now? Now it's clear. There's a Beis HaMikdash now. What's God expect Am Yisrael to be doing? They should come back. Now you need a Tanakh. Without this, you can't understand. Look in your Tanakh now. It's also source G. But we finish the end of Perek Vav, we do a Chanukah Tabayit. And we have a Passover program. We have a Passover celebration. Why? Why are we celebrating Passover now in year 6? We finish the Beis HaMikdash when? In Adar. And the next month, it's a great Passover. Because we're back. It's the first time we have the Beis HaMikdash and we can celebrate Passover the right way. We have a big Korban Pesach and everyone's happy. What should happen? This is going to be the most important part of this year to understand Chazal. I'm expecting now, what else are we waiting for? God has to make planes up to move people, 500 people at a time, to bring them back to Israel. How much more does God have to do to bring them back? And guess what happens? Well, in the book of Ezra, nothing. There's nothing. Because the next parak is Parak Zion. And what event is in Parak Zion? How does it begin in Parak Zion? Achar Zvarim Me'ele, B'machut Artachshasta. Pshad is Artachshasta is a new king. Because Dariavesh is named Dariavesh. Artachshasta is... And we're going from the 6th year of Dariavesh to the 7th year of Artachshasta. And who makes Aliyah? That's Ezra's Aliyah. You've heard of Ezra's Aliyah, right? That's Parak Vav. I mean, that's in Pasuk Vav. Who is Ezra Lami Bavel? Who's the sofer? He was like a big rabbi. And Pasuk Zayin, Belubnei Yisrael min Hakohanim Melevim Shorim, B'shan Sheva L'Tachshas Ta'amelech. Ki Ezra Evin Hekin Levavod, Yidrosh Et Torat Hashem L'Asot L'Meid Yisrael Chol K'Mishpat. He's coming from Bavel to teach the people in Jerusalem, getting back on the right derech.
What's the time jump from the end of F to the beginning of G?
Perfect. From F to G, that's the question. There's a gap. Got it? This is the most important part of the shir. And Chazal assume you recognize this gap. There's a gap between your 6 of Dariavesh to your 7 of Artachshasta. Got that? What should be happening? Aliyah, what else is God waiting for? What is Am Yisrael waiting for? The book of Ezra doesn't say anything about it. Silence. The next event is a massive Aliyah with who? With Ezra. When Ezra comes, you know what happens when Ezra comes? You have to read the book. We don't have time to read the whole book. Ezra comes, ready to teach Torah. What's he find when he gets there? Ezra's coming, you know, big aliyah, he's got tons of things. And the people to Ezra, yeah, Rabbi, you know, we're happy you came, we respect you, etc. But you got nobody to teach. Because everyone's intermarried. Not everybody, mostly. There's tons of intermarriage. People aren't Shomer Shabbos Bichal. The businesses are open. The walls of Jerusalem are in shambles. The temple is, it's there, but it's neglected. Says, what are you trying to do, Rabbi? You're teaching, you know, all these halachas of, you know, sfeika. You go, people don't know the basics. You better get things happening. First, get him Jewish again. And this guy Ben Shchania, then say he starts crying and davening, and the people he gets a big crowd, and he gets a following, and then there's a committee. They say, okay, we're going to do something about it, and okay, we're going to get rid of our Nashim Nachriot. And then they gather together to do it, and it's raining that day, and they say, okay, Rabbi, but we're going to put it in committees. Not all in one day. It's too cold. You have to read the book one day. It's awesome. That's where Tefillah Sedera comes from. It's easy Hebrew also. It's a sad story, but it's a beautiful story. But I'm getting at, when Ezra comes, there's mass intermarriage. Got it? He says so. Ezra comes, he does not meet Haggai or Zechariah or Zerubbabel or Yeshua Kan Gadol. All the characters of the first 6 chapters of the book of Ezra, when they build the second temple, not a word about them. We find their grandchildren. This guy Eliashiv is the Kohen Gadol. And he's married, and his kids are married to Sanballat, the Shomroni, or whoever he is. A Choroni, maybe from Beit Cholon or something, but he's the Goyisha leader. And Tuvi Amoni. They're not Jewish, the other people, but there's tons of intermarriage. And there's tons of corruption. And and there's nothing even to work with. And Ezra has to do a whole revival. 13 years later, Nehemiah comes. Nehemiah comes in year 20. That's the book of Nehemiah. And he comes and fixes up the walls of the city and gets a little nationalism back. He gets a little Jewish pride. And then finally, after they build the walls, they make this big amana. Remember that story? Where they make an agreement to be God's people? For homework, maybe just read Ezra Nehemiah. It'll take you maybe half an hour. If you're troubled, you can read it in English. It's just people. It's basic Jewish history. And Chazal was to me, you know that. Now, here's the big point. Between chapter 6 and 7, which just so happens to be between year 6 of Daryavesh and year 7 of Artaxerxes, and in Pshat, when you read the books, when Ezra comes, it's two generations later. And outside sources match it perfectly. We'll talk about the Persian sources and Greek sources. It matches outside history perfectly what's happening in the book of Ezra and Nehemiah. Because Ezra is coming some 50, 60 years later. And it's a classic example of second, third generation assimilation. And things are a disaster. Ezra shapes Judaism, basically. Remember? He could have been Moshe Rabbeinu. Because I wanted something. So he...
Could you repeat?
Yeah.
Said chapter 6 of Ezra is year which?
Year 6 of Daryavesh. That's Pasuk Yedaled.
Pasuk
Tevash. And chapter 7 is year 7 of Artaxerxes. And there's a gap. Artaxerxes. Yeah. Got that? And there's a gap. Now, go to the other page I gave you, with all the year, with all the numbers, with the charts and everything. Flip it over and look at source E. It says list of Persian kings found in standard history books. Without going into thing, but you can go to Persia. You'll find the grave of Koresh. You'll find the grave of Daryavesh. You'll find all these kings. You'll find all their history books. There's Greek historians who write about them. And from archaeological studies, from historical studies, from putting things together, this is a list of kings you'll find in every book, give or take a year or two. Got it? There's some 200 years of Persian Empire. And the Persians recorded things. And the Greeks talked about it, because the Greeks and the Persians went to war left and right. Remember? They run marathons, don't they? The Battle of Marathon was 492 BCE, where the Greeks defeated Darius. That was Darius' big defeat. That was in 492, when the guy ran to Marathon, whatever. Now, who are the kings? There's a king named Cyrus. There's a king named Cambyses. There's a king named Darius, Xerxes, Artaxerxes. Got it? Artaxerxes. Now, that list fits not perfectly. Why? Because who's Cyrus? That's obviously Koresh. Okay. Who's the king between Koresh and Daryavesh? It's Cambyses, who's not mentioned in the Fath by name.
Who is Cyrus' son?
No, I don't think so. There's a big machlokes going on between who's kid and who's kid. But it's not a direct monarchy. It's not like there's other people taking over and cousins and other families and things like that. Okay. Then there's Daryavesh. Okay, between Daryavesh and Artaxerxes, and there's exactly 18 years between the first year of Koresh and second year of Daryavesh. If it's not perfectly between Daryavesh and Artaxerxes, in that gap in the book of Ezra, what do we find? Xerxes, who fits perfectly with Ahasuerus, just dumped the Aleph and yet Shashrash. Because his name isn't Ahasuerus or Xerxes, it's something in Greek. Like Xerx is something like that. But in Aramaic, you put an Aleph in front. No, Ahasuerus is a perfect match for Xerxes. And therefore, what's happening between chapter 6 and 7 in real Jewish history, in real Persian history? That's Ahasuerus and that's Megillat Esther. Now, the book of Ezra is hiding Megillat Esther. And I think her name was Hadassah, though. For some reason, they called the book Esther. And remember Chazal asked Esther mina Torah minayin? And he asked Esther panai, which is all about Shirat Hazinu, about who to blame when things go wrong. Now, the question is going to be, why is the book of Ezra hiding it? A whole different topic, but it's hiding something. But if I find outside history, when is Megillat Esther happening? Exactly when Am Yisrael should be coming back to its land. Because God did everything He could do. Where's Am Yisrael? And what do we find? We find a nation, Am Echad, Mufuzam Frad Ben Amim, Vetatei HaMelech Einam Shomim. V'lo Shaveh LeMelech LaNicham. Whose voice, remember, who's the Melech? Why is God's name missing? Am Yisrael is supposed to see, when God is hoping that Am Yisrael sees the hand of God behind these events, He's hoping they'll see that and react. What happens instead? They don't see the hand of God behind the events. So I'm going to write a book about it and hide God's name with the hope that what? The message is the medium. The medium is the message. Got my point? Hiding God's name is half the point of the Megillah. And things aren't happening by chance. They're happening not by chance. That we call the book, we call the holiday by chance. I think. What's the name of the holiday? By chance. It's not by chance, it's called by chance. It's just by chance it came out that day. Remember, he built poor. Yeah. But Chazal, maybe poor, maybe Kippurim. Remember, maybe there's something deeper going on. Now, that's the question. When Megillat Esther was written, was the original audience of Megillat Esther, written, was a book written for people who know this background? And it's a Musar Shmuz about where are you people? And why were you almost destroyed and later why is God saving you at the last minute anyhow? Which is all the theme of Shirat Hazinu. If you read every Shirat Hazinu, you should have been destroyed, but God has Rachamim at the end, he'll save you anyhow. Just read it one time, remember? Don't blame things on God, blame it on yourself. And how bad things are when you don't listen to God. But no matter how bad things are, there's a safety net. Ultimately, God will come and save you. And God does. But then when it's done, that's the message. That's what Deuteronomy Isaiah is saying, and that's what Shirat Hazinu is saying. That's the question. Do you read? When I read Megillat Esther, was it written for people who know this background? And we didn't get into Zahari later on with his Nebuah in year 4, where he talks about an Ish Yehudi who should be in Yerushalayim. And that's a big question that you have to deal with. Now, if it's true, then the whole book is about, this is the background to the book. So it's like reading the book without that. It's like reading Animal Farm without knowing about the Russian Revolution. That's what I did in high school. I read Animal Farm, we had to do a book report, everyone remembers the standard high school curriculum. And I had not a thing about Yeshiva High School, about Russian Revolution in 1970. Who heard of it? And it was a great book. I remember I even enjoyed it. Right? But I had no idea that it was referring to something. Only like years later I put two and two together. A good centaur, you can read it, and it reads by itself. But when you, same thing if you want, some people have Amkus and Harry Potter. You know that? Like there's talking to, there's, the Wizard of Oz for sure has tons of Amkus, if you know. That's what literature does. And Megillat Esther is a literary work. It's like too perfect to be it's not a chronicle. That's got to be clear, isn't it? It's not written like a chronicle. It's a ballad. It's got perfect structure. If you know, Leonard Grossman has a whole book on he proves why it's satire, and, from a he knows the literature side of it. He proves why. Yoni Grossman? Anton Grossman? I don't know if it's in English. Yeah. It's definitely in Hebrew. It came out about four or five years ago, 6 years. It's I forget the name even. Nothing about. Maybe Hadassah. I forget what it's named. It's something Esther, something like that. Now what happened? How come no one knows this? That has to do with the Jewish date. I'll explain something. But my claim is when I read. Just one thing. Just take one quick look and go back to Zecharia for a minute. Go to Zecharia Perek Zayin. Remember, we start from the book of Ezra. This I'm sure we've done before. This is for fast days. In Zecharia Perek Zayin, it's year 4 of Daryavish because it says so. Remember, they break ground in year 2 and they finish building in year 6. In Zecharia Perek Zayin, there's a story about a delegation being sent from Persia with a question for Yerushalayim. What's the big question? The famous question. It's called Hevkeh Chodesh Chamishi. They're sending a delegation from Bavel, and they're asking the rabbis in Yerushalayim, the Kohanim, do we continue fasting on Tisha B'Av? It's a famous sugya, I'm sure you heard it before. The 4 fast days is built on this. Remember God's answer? God's answer was, don't ask me the Rabbanans, ask me the Arises. If Allah says, God says, I didn't ask you to fast. You're asking me about fasting? You decided to fast. If you want to fast, that's your problem. But if you want to know what I want you to do, read Tanakh, he says. He says, here's what you should be asking. Don't ask, should I fast or not? You're not fasting, remember what happened. You're fasting, remember why it happened. And if you want this to be the real Gula, don't ask me, is this the final redemption? Don't ask me, is this the final Gula? Because it's not up to me, it's up to you. God says, I'm giving you an opportunity. And you can make it happen. But you have to do your side. And that's what's high screaming all through Perek Zayin Chet. Just take a quick... just skip to, in Perek... That's what he says in Perek Zayin. He goes through Yirmiyahu about fixing your ways. Just remember when Yerushalayim was fine back in Pasuk Zayin, he says, when things were great, the Nevi'im warned you that if you don't improve your behavior and build a just society, I'll kick you out of here. And you didn't listen. And I warned you and warned you. You didn't listen. That's why I threw you out for rehab. And then he said, just like I went out of my way to punish you, I'm out of my way to bring you back. That's in Parachet. He says, Kasher Zamamti, this is what I made it to bring you out. I'm bringing you back now. Now, just skip to Parachet. Just read Pasuk Zayin in Parachet. What God's doing. That's God's answer to the people. One more line. You do him in stakan, this could be the final gula. Remember the Brit? It's the fourth cup. It's Har Sinai. It's why God took us out of Egypt. We mumbled in Shema today. Didn't we? Why did God take us out of Egypt? Which is the Brit of Brit Milah. It's the biggest phrase. You sing about it in Kippur. Anu Amecha Teloheinu. You've heard that theme before. That we're God's people and we're working for Him. It's called saying Shema. Now, the God's saying it can happen now, but you have to do your side. And the people are asking this question, do we fast or not? And he says, that's what's called, that's myopic. What are they worried about? They're worried about, you know, they're planning summer camp. And do we have to do instructional swimming in the 9 days or we can get, do we have to make a siyum every night? And there's all these nafkaminas in Galus if the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. I'm being sarcastic. Not my point. He's saying, what are you asking these little questions? There's a big thing going on. And he gives them a whole speech. Now, sit to Pasuk Yudalad. This is what he says. In Yudalad, let's read it. He says, just like I went out of my way to punish you, I'm going out of my way to bring you back.
Yeah.
Actually, I have this on a source sheet. I pass these around. For those who don't have, here. Pass this around, here.
I knew you were holding
it. Yeah, I was wanting to hold that. This is fast days and the feast days. Tani Tester. Okay? Just look at the... It's a nice review of what we did. I just reviewed the source sheet. And A, what I just gave you is the timeline, the basics of the timeline that we talked about. B is a question they sent from Bavel about fasting on the Chodesh Hamishi. And God's answer, did I ask you to fast? I didn't ask you to eat. And here's what you need to do. In D, he says, the first December was destroyed because Mishpatim et Shvotu, be kind to one another, and that's why it was destroyed, because you weren't. And then God saying, I'm returning. And then we just read that redemption is a two-way street. Now flip that over to the flip side. Pasuk Tetzayin. Got it? He says, God says, just like I went out of my way to punish you, I'm redeeming you. And then he gets specific. Listen to the words. Eilad v'am yesher tasu. Dabru emet ish et re'ehu. You see that? What's that mean? But that's the last one. This is one. Everyone have? If not, you'll share one or two. What's he say? Dabru, it's Pasuk Tetzayin in your Tanakh, in Perichet. Eilad v'am yesher tasu. Dabru emet ish re'ehu. Here's what you did. What's God doing? God's saying, read Pasuk Tetvav again. Pasuk Tetvav, which is before Tetzayin. I'm being zomim. I'm plotting now to do good for you, Yerushalayim. Don't worry. Take the next step. Now, that's what I'm doing. What do you need to do? Remember that phrase. Emet mishpat shalom shiftu b'sharechem. V'ishet ra'at re'ehu atashu b'avchem. Shvat shekel tahavu ki et kol esher saneti. You want this time to work? What do you need to do? Fix your society. Be kind to one another. Quit lying and cheating and things like that. Quit playing the Sinat Chinam game. Remember? There's always good reasons for Sinat Chinam. Now, then he says the famous line. Yeah, real quick.
Why did they use the word zomein? Is that the word for what God is doing? Is that the word you would use?
If you know Edim Zomamin, that's the whole idea. Mm-hmm. No, it's when you're plotting something. When you're plotting, you're master plotting something. So God's saying, look, go back in Pasuk Yudal. It says, Kesher zamamti l'ralachem, baksiba avotechem oti, v'loni chamti. Just like I went out of my way to bring in the Babylonians, I didn't go back on that. I brought the Babylonians to punish you, and I didn't change my v'loni chamti. Came zamamti, I'm going out of my way to bring you back, and that's why I brought in the Persians. I think that he knows what he's doing in the Navi. Now, then he gives his final answer. Rabbi, do we fast or don't we fast? What's the psak? The famous line in F, Vayidvar Hashem Tzvot Le'emor, Kol Amar Hashem Tzvot, Tzoma Revi, Tzoma Chamishi, Tzoma Shvi, Tzoma Tziri, Yele Beit Yudal Sason Simcha L'modim Tovim, Ve'em Bet V'Shalom Ahavu. The fast days can turn into holidays on what condition? You love Emet V'Shalom. Okay? Remember that. Remember those phrases, because they come up in the Megillah. Yeah. Got that? No, it's on the condition you keep Emet V'Shalom, the fast days can become holidays. Have you ever a fast day that became a holiday? Was there ever a fast? Was ever a day that was a fast day? The next year became a holiday. It's called Purim, isn't it? Me'evel Yom Tov, Me'obem L'Simcha, Me'evel Yom Tov. No.
Can you say about why here it's almost for Shalom at the end of the Megillah?
Close enough. You know, just it's called Nasa V'Nishma, Nishma V'Nasa. That's the same. There's a word for that when you have two words always like Mishpat and Staka and Chesed V'Emet, and there's some word for it in English. A do of something. Yeah. No. Even better. Now, then he continues, end of Perchet and G. Kol Hashem Tzvot, Ode Asher Yavo Amim, Yoshvei Amrim Rabot, V'chu Yoshvei Echad Echad, V'nechal Hadloch L'chad P'nei Hashem, V'vakesh Hashem Tzvot L'chad Gamani, Uvo Amim Rabim, Goyim Matzumim, V'vakesh Hashem Tzvot Yushan, V'chad P'nei Yudah. Not only are the Jews going to come back and be my nation, it will be so good that I'm going to fulfill Isaiah chapter 2. That other nations are going to come to Yushan for guidance. That's God's ultimate goal. That we're going to sanctify God in the eyes of the nations when we're doing our job right. You have a mikdash, you have a nation, you'll be acting properly, and other nations are going to come to visit you and learn about God through your behavior. And the icon will be the Beit HaMikdash, where people will come, and it'll be so good, look in Pasachav Gimel, Kol Meshem Tzvot, B'imim Ahema, when all the nations are coming because you're acting properly, Ashi Yachziku Asara Anashim, Mikol HaShonot HaGoyim, V'chziku B'chnaf Ish Yudi Lemor Nechoy Mechem Kishamano V'mimachem, and that's the end of Perichet, and the end of a whole unit in Zechariah. And that's the answer to the Babylonian Jews asking, do we fast or not? And saying, don't be so myopic. There's redemption happening. You can do something about it. But it's not just coming to Israel, it's building the proper society in Israel. And it can be so good that there'll be 10 non-Jews waiting for the audience of an Ish Yehudi to show them the ways of God. And therefore, in the time of Zechariah, he's hoping by the next generation there'll be an Ish Yehudi where? In the Biran Yerushalayim. Doing what? Making a name for God. And what do we find in the next generation? There's an issue with where? Birah. Because it replaced that. And what's his name? For God's sake. I mean, for... his name is Marduk. No one in Beit Rishon is called Memrish Dalet Chav. I'm sorry, I'm wrong. Evil Merodach is a king. Merodach Baladan is a king. They're all Babylonian kings. Why? Because that's their name. That's their god. And everyone, that's like a double parsha that Marduk is the chief Babylonian god. You say, I have good, there's a god of evil, there's like, they have lots of dualism and stuff. I'm assuming it. That's exactly the point. Something went wrong, didn't it?
Is Esther or Astarte?
But it could be. Or Esther could, it could both be. Also Nistar. And Ochi Esther also could be Ishtar, yeah. That's what most people say. That's the question. Are the authors of Megillat Esther assuming that their audience knows Zechariah and the Nevoah? And if this is the last Nevoah in the time of Dayavesh, got it? Sent to the Galut, and the next generation is Megillat Esther, something's going on. Now, look at H. At the end of the Megillah, we're celebrating, aren't we? How do we celebrate our victory? Right? Look, what's the first letter that Mordechai writes? How are we going to fulfill this commandment, this celebration? What are we going to do? We're going to make, look in Pasach Abed. Kemim mishanuch abem ayudim avihem, b'chodesh asher nafach lehem, miyagon l'simcha me'evel liyom tov, l'asot l'otam yimei mishteh b'simcha. The next year, we're going to have yimei mishteh b'simcha instead of a yom tzom. And what are we going to do? What mitzvot? Mishloch monot ish L're'ehu, u'matot le'vinim. Is there any precedent of matanot ish l're'ehu? Not one. Don't tell me Nehemiah, that's matanot le'inachonlo, on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. That's matanot le'vinim. That's Simchat Yom Tov in general, helping poor people. That's the first mission Shabbos also. Remember, there's the Ani outside. Why is the Ani waiting outside the house? Because that's what Shabbos is about. You know, taking care of other people. Now, but these are exactly the mitzvot that Yirmiyahu was screaming, that Zechariah was screaming about. That have to be the focus and the reason why Geulah will be complete. That's what Am Yisrael needs to be doing. And that explains the Takanot of Purim, because we missed an opportunity, we don't want to miss it again. So we have to be ready. Maybe not every generation can make it back, but we can start acting in a way to be worthy. Now, I don't think that people understood the first takana, the first letter, because the fact that the Megillah says kimu v'kiblu, it's called michenat toshamei alav. Remember the Gemara talks about there was a big argument of was Purim accepted or not? It's not by chance. It's not in the, they didn't find it in Qumran. So they have to send a second letter, which is the end of the Megillah. What's the second letter? That's not the first line of the second letter. That's the entire second letter. Are divrei shalom v'emet. Now, if I don't know Zechariah, we don't know what that is. If I know Zechariah, and the reader assumes we know Zechariah, then what's divrei shalom v'emet? It's Zechariah perichet. Which explains why. Why is he telling him divrei shalom v'emet? To understand the laws of Purim, the kaiem et dimei Purim eile bismanim kashur kima eile morcha yudei b'aster makah, the kashur kama nafsham divrei atzmaot v'sakatam. What are divrei atzmaot v'sakatam? That's chayah perachet at the fast days that turn to holidays.
Why is Esther's name absent in H?
In H?
Yeah.
Esther, it's right there in pasuk. Oh, Mordechai. They weren't. If it was written by Esther, they wouldn't be accepted. She cannot. She not have authority. That he might think she's sorry, become a show president or something. By the second letter already, she said that they didn't listen, and then they had. When she writes already, now they have her authority. Maybe explains why she has to write the second letter with Molochan. I'm sort of joking, but is that my point? It's more authoritative the second letter. Because Esther's the Malka. Yeah, remember, it's Esther Malka is her name now. Yeah.
So seeing the Megillah in this context leaves me with a question, which is the whole thrust of the Nevi'im had been for the Jewish people to go back to Israel.
Uh-huh.
In this Megillah, it sort of ends without any mention of Eretz Yisrael.
Because you're supposed to find it yourself. Now, there's one way not to get the message. Sometimes you hide something too good. Remember, sometimes you hide something too good and you never find it?
Why is it being hidden? Why doesn't...
Because the message... Well, why can't Natan tell David what you did is bad? You give him a shaon and you got to figure out... It's called Musar. Any good Musar works that way. Why does anyone write a satire? Settle gets the message across. And the whole idea is... Listen, Natan, the medium is the message. Am Yisrael was supposed to see the hand of God behind these events. The hidden hand of God. And they didn't see it. And Miguel Esther is doing the same thing as it writes the story. He's hiding the message. The question is, sometimes they do too good a job of hiding. Now, if the assumption of the book is the audience knows Zechariah, there's two ways not to get the message. And we're machmir on both of them. One is not to study Tanakh, and then you'll never get the message. The other is, in case you did, just get drunk. And you won't know the difference between Mordechai and Esther. Right? And that's a good way to blur the message. And we're machmir on both. We're non-profit, and we drink on Purim. Yeah, and we survived. We get along. Okay, nothing ever terrible happened since. I mean, Jewish state hasn't been so good. But that's a different story. Yeah.
But it's like your thesis is that
it's not provable. You can follow.
your thesis is that there are two things really going on at the same time. One is Zechariah asking the Jewish people to behave.
To be worthy of redemption,
structure.
Which was that's what Yirmiyahu was screaming.
That is explicitly happening in the Megillah. If you know Zechariah, you see the connection.
Uh-huh.
The other thing going on is Hashem is waiting for the Jewish people to take the opening and come back to Eretz Yisrael, which is not happening in the Megillah. The Jewish people don't get that message.
It didn't happen.
It doesn't happen until later in Ezra's time.
Yeah.
And that is, there's no reference to that in the Megillah at all.
Because it's too late at the time of Mordechai, it doesn't happen. Maybe there's no opportunity anymore at the time of...
We know there is because later on Ezra knows.
Okay, but that's another 20 years later. Maybe that's what gets Ezra moving till they get the message. But is there any present Jewish history where there's a massive miracle and we have a chance to go back to our land and people just don't get it and they stay where they are? How about Balfour Declaration? How about 1917?
How about Korach?
And how about Europe? Okay. So,
can you elaborate on... It's not obvious to me. If Zechariah is saying what he's saying, how are the people a couple hundred miles east supposed to catch that?
He sends a letter back. There's a delegation. And that's the nevuah of Zechariah that Am Yisrael gets in Galut.
So you're saying that the reason they should be familiar with, or that they could be familiar with the pieces of Zecharia they need to be, is that piece of Zecharia is couched in a letter.
Yeah. And that's and it's the last dated Nevuah in Tanakh, pretty sure. The last event will be the third. No, it's the last stories are Nehemiah coming.
It, yeah. It can't yet have the title of Nevi'im. Can it?
It's in Zaria. It's not in Ketuvim.
Well, I guess Ezra's in Ketuvim. What's the status of these Svarim before this? Well,
they got so, they were canonized.
There was a big shrug.
You can't let it go. They get Tuma. They make it to Masechet Baba Batra, don't they? But I mean, it happened later, so I'm assuming it makes sense it happened when it was written. I'm assuming.
What's the status of the, are they even written down?
I'm assuming they were. They didn't come out of nowhere. In fact, they sent letters to Yerushalayim means they care about Yerushalayim. Anyway, it's recorded. That's the that we won't know. I'm saying, but I'm saying it can't be proven. It's just conjecture. It could be Purim Torah, but it's a. Something beat me, Machmer. Now, just real quick, because I know it's really late. If anyone has to leave, no problem. But if you want to know how this affects Jewish history, okay, what did Chazal do? The same thing the Book of Ezra did. Between Perek Vav and Zayin, what's happening? It's hidden, correct? Between Perek Vav and Zayin in the Book of Ezra, nothing's happening when things should be happening. It ignores that time period, like nothing happened. There's a work. A Brita called Seder Olam. You familiar with it? Mm-hmm. Seder Olam is Seder Olam. A tribute to Rabbi Yosef Bar Chalafta, but it's Second Temple Midrash, trying to make history. You know what Seder Olam does? Seder Olam, because Seder Olam has to keep things, you know, Seder Olam makes the following bold conclusion. You know what they say happened between year 6 of Dayavesh and year 7 of Tachshasta? Nothing. You know why? Because there is no gap. You know what Seder Olam says? It's the same king. We just changed his name to protect the innocent.
The same thing, but what?
The same king. He says, "Hu Daryavesh Hu Artachshasta." Remember what the Gemara says? The Gemara is quoting Seder Olam all the time. We'll see why it became so accepted. Seder Olam says that Daryavesh is Artachshasta, and hence there's no gap. Remember, I proved to you there's a gap between Perek Vav and Zayin. It's shot of the book, no doubt about it. But it's a hidden gap. Seder Olam makes a bold conclusion and says, it's the same king. And when does Ezra make Aliyah? The next year. And Daryavesh is Artachshasta. You got that? That's clear. That's what they're saying. That's like black and white. They're saying there is no gap. So that's in Seder Olam. I put a copy of Seder Olam on the last page. That's in Seder Olam, which is the Shana Ba Al Ezra. It's on like number 4 or number 5. Number 5. Here, at the end of 4, right before number 5. It says, Ko Arba Shanim, Haya Bait Nivneh from year 2 to year 6. B'shein Tzabait Adonah, they quote the Pasuk in Ezra Perek 6. U'boto Azman, L'shana Haba, Ala Ezra Mibavel, B'glut Techeret Imo. Shema Achar Dvam Eilam, B'chut Al Tachshasta, Melah Paras, V'ayel Minabel. Okay? Which is 7 of Al Tachshasta. Got it? You understand what they're saying? Daryavesh is Artachshasta. Now, that's the Gishav Seder Olam, that whenever there's Enabam Mikra Listom El Farish, he says he always keeps things to a minimum. But I'll give you another reason why they do that. But Chazal's conclusion in the gap between chapter 6 and 7 is that there is no gap. It's the next year. That's one gap. That's one thing. Now, if that's the case, what's really happening historically between Daryavesh and Artachshasta? Is Achashverosh Megillat Esther. But when Chazal say there is no gap, then I can't put Achashverosh in the gap. Because there's no gap. So where do I have to put him? I got to put him earlier. And who is he? He's the king, missing king between Koresh and Daryavesh. Got it? Once you say Daryavesh is Artachshasta, and there's no gap between chapter 6 and 7, the only place I can put Achashverosh and Megillat Esther is in the 18 years between Koresh and Daryavesh. Can he fit? Well, there's 14 years, there's 13 years of Megillat Esther, maybe 14. Is there room? Well, there's 2 years of Daryavesh, 14 there, that leaves 3 years for Koresh. Well, Daniel has a chalom in the third year of Koresh. So you know what the rabbis say? The third year of Koresh was the last year of Koresh. It doesn't say that in Tanakh. It says, we know Koresh was king for at least 3 years, but it says he had a heart attack that year, or maybe whatever it is. That was the end of his reign. The next year, Ahasuerus took over, and they wrote the seat down to Yehudim in the beginning of his reign, and that's why the building was stopped. Got it? Fits perfect. And then Megillat says happens in those next, in the 14 years in between. The year the Megillah is over, Ahasuerus gets his heart attack. And maybe it was stomach butter because he couldn't take the chillin from Esther. He went, whatever it was. He couldn't handle the Jewish cooking. But whatever it was, he dies. Who takes over? Dayabish was the son of Esther. Understand? That's what everyone learned. You follow? Isn't that a beautiful midrash? It's beautiful, isn't it? It's so compelling. Because what's it explain? Why is it that the second of Dayabish, all of a sudden the Jews can build a mikdash again? If there was a building freeze from Koresh to Dayabish, what caused the Jews, what enabled the Jews to build the mikdash in year 2 of Dayabish? What do they say? Well, who's Dayabish? The son of Esther. Now, how old could he possibly be?
Yeah.
He can't be more than 5 years old.
Right.
Which means who's running the country? Esther and Mordechai. She's writing letters. She's already she's allowed to be in a Koresh country. She can be a president. She can't have authority. Especially when it helps us. Got it? That's the matter she all learned. You follow? That's not pshat. It doesn't fit outside history, nothing. But it's a beautiful pshat, that's all. It's so nice, it just got accepted. Better than that, what's happening the third year of Ahasuerus' reign? What's the first event in the book? B'shlash Shal Shmoho makes a big party. Choser of Avadav. Why is he making a party? Remember? The rabbi's got to throw Yirmiyahu back in, right? Why is he making the party? Because Yirmiyahu's 7 years are over, or almost over. Everybody made a mistake. It was really only 69 years. Why 69? The first year of Koresh was 70, but he wasn't. No. The 70 years he holds is from Galut Yehoyachin. Not from the fourth year of Yehoyachin, but from Galut Yehoyachin, 7 years later. So it's year 69 since Galut Yehoyachin. Got it? Because 3 years of Koresh, 3 years of Ahasuerus, that's 6 years since Koresh. And there's 7 years from the fourth year of Yehoyachin until Galut Yehoyachin. Understand? So, do the cheshbon, and it comes out to 69 years since Galut Yehoyachin. And he made a mistake, because he wasn't so good at math. And he made a party. But he was up by a year. That's what Sefer Olam says. That's what you learned in this read art school. It's right there. And they write it like it's real history. And you fail your test if you don't write it that way. Yeah.
So,
but you understand where all those midrashim are coming from? I want you to appreciate where they're coming from, because it's beautiful midrash, but that's why it's called midrash. Because that's what midrash means. Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out whether the thing that compels you to take the history the other way is
history.
Internal to Tanakh.
Is history.
Internal
to Tanakh, yeah.
Or external. So
both.
So internal to Tanakh, we know that Koresh already gave back the Kelim before Ahasuerus.
Mm-hmm.
How could the Midrash...
Because the Midrash assumes you know your Tanakh, and he's saying it sarcastically.
Right.
The Midrash is trying to throw... The Midrash is doing everything to get Yirmiyahu and Zechariah back into the Megillah. And they're making what... Who should be thinking about Yirmiyahu 70 years? Not Ahasuerus, but Am Yisrael. Amisrael should not be at the party, because they should be worried about Yirmiyahu 7 years. So they put it, it's everything Vanatochu, they're putting it in Ahasuerus' brain.
If you take the Seder Olam Rabbah, you take their history as an attempt at writing Jewish history.
No, it's not an attempt. It's Midrashic history. When it was written, it wasn't meant to be taken literally. That's my whole point. When this was written, no one took it literally.
Let me put it this way. Can you prove that it wasn't meant to be taken literally, because... How could it be that that Koresh gave permission to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash before the 70 years lapsed? Or he already gave the... What's Ahasuerus celebrating?
Ahasuerus is... Read Herodotus, in the third year of his reign, he's putting together an army to attack Greece to make up for the Battle of Marathon.
According to
the seventh year of his reign, when he loses the battle, in the Battle of Salamis. In other words, and who's the party for? 180 days, Chel Paras Madai, that's exactly when he's staging his army. And he gives a speech there about he's making himself Melech Machleim Melechim.
Right. In the worldview of the Midrash.
Yeah.
Why is there a party? Because the Jews are not going
to... No. In the world of Midrash, the party, Achshmeikin party, the Rovi Midrash, wants to put what the Jews should be thinking into the head of Achashverosh. It's writing something which is so ridiculously, impossibly, can't be historical, that the reader has common sense to realize this is avort and not history. Because when you say something that's so ridiculous, right? Yeah. If you say something so ridiculous, of course it can't be what it means. It's got to mean something deeper.
That's not what people do in Sarah.
Oh, what?
That's not what people do.
500 years later, that's what we do. But when it was written, that's why it was written.
Okay, I'm
I'll prove you from Josephus has all the Persian kings. And he's a Tana. I mean, he's the time of the Tanaim. He's 100 years before Seder Olam. The Tanaim know the real history. The Amorim don't.
I'm not challenging you. I'm trying to understand, according to people who take the Midrash literally, how would they understand Achashverosh's celebration in light of the fact that, even according to them, Koresh has already given permission.
They say Mixas Kalim. They say the word Mixas Kalim. Chisur Mechaser B'Hachik Tani. They do that all the time, don't they? When they argue with Tanoim.
What's Achashverosh celebrating if the Jews have already started rebuilding?
I agree with you. Questions are good questions unless you take it midrashically. No, there's no way to understand it literally if you know your Tanakh. That's why it's called Midrash. That's up now. But let me explain why it got so accepted. What?
You keep invoking Tanakh, and I'm not sure it exists yet.
That's a different question. I'm assuming Tanakh existed. I believe in God and in the word of the prophets. I said it when I read the Haftarah yesterday. I said, truth doesn't mean historically true, it means true, thematically true. Okay. Now, my goal is to appreciate Chazal, that's what I'm saying. And I'm trying to say why Chazal wrote things, and either I take it literally and bang my head against the wall, but then I lose two things. I don't appreciate what Chazal were saying. Chazal don't come to teach me history, they come to teach me Judaism. And Jewish history, and finding the head of God behind history. Now, why did it get so accepted? Why they accepted as real history? The reason is simple. That's for a totally different reason. But it's complicated. If you want to leave, fine. But if you want to stay, this is awesome. If you want to get it. It solves a massive problem.
What problem?
It's a massive problem about the Jewish year.
Right.
It's in your ksuba. what do we count years to nowadays? To Bria Sa'olam. Tanakh never did that. The Gemara never did that. No one ever counted to Briyat Olam. It wasn't the Minhag. We counted to kings. Or in Chumash, we count to Yitzhak Mitzrayim, don't we? And with Shlomo Bez Mikdash, we count to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Okay? We count to Jewish kings during Bayit Rishon. We count to Persian kings in the Persian term, because that's what there is. Along come the Greeks. Remember them? The Greeks defeated the Persians finally. Remember Alexander the Great? Same last name as like Cyrus and Darius. It's a popular last name, the Great. It's a great last name. But I'm joking. But you've heard of Alexander the Great. The Greeks took over, and he has this big conquest. And then he conquered so much Alexander that when he died very young. He died. There was a fight of succession. And after 8 years of fighting, in 312 BCE, after the Battle of Gaza, they made a pshara. They made a coalition. They said, listen, no one's going to win. We have to divide this up. And Talmai got Egypt, Seleucus, Seleucids got Syria, and Demetrius got Greek. It's famous. You've heard of that?
Yeah.
It's famous. It's documented. Every year of Greek history is documented, year by year. And Minestro began in -312. That was the Greek year. And they came up with a chop, which is amazing. Because I was born in the fourth year of King Eisenhower. And the Six-Day War was third year of Johnson, right? And my bar mitzvah was the third year of Kennedy, or something like that. Got it? Now, if I said that, if I don't know the list of presidents by heart, I don't know what I'm talking about. You follow? It's much easier if I said it was 1950, you follow? The Greeks, they're smart. What do they do? They start counting consecutive years. That's a chiddush. Whoa. You follow? That changes the way you view history. The idea that that's how we got millennials. And we got the two, you follow? And this, all of a sudden you're counting, you're looking forward. You don't appreciate what it means to count forward with years. The Greek came up with a great chop. And now they're counting years, keep on going. We don't count the kings anymore. We're counting to the Greek, to the Hellenism. And the Greek year just went viral, didn't it? Everyone's using the Greek year. Even the rabbis using the Greek year. They call it Minyan Shtarot. You've heard of it?
Yep.
Now, learn Masechet Sanhedrin. Every shtar has to have a date. Otherwise it's puzzle. And the date includes the year. What year are we going to use? You can't use the year of the Jewish king, because there's no Jewish king during Bayit Sheni. During the time of the Tanaim. You can use, when there's Persian kings, you can use the date of the Persian king. But you have to use whatever everyone's using. So we're under Greek influence. We call Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin, we call, there's tons of Greek influence. Ask Sumchus and ask, you know, Antigonus, and we're half Greek, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Then we become Roman. But what year are they using? They're using the Greek year, and therefore we have to use the Greek year. Is that it? And that's the Gemara says, our minhag, we use the Greek year. It's called Minyan Shtarot, the Minyan Yevanim. Because they're doing the work, they're keeping track. The same reason we use 2020, because it's viral. We use something that everyone's using. It's not a statement of faith. Now, but the rabbis, I want to suggest something, which I think is easy to prove. The rabbis want to do something really cute, really interesting. Okay, what are they saying? Wouldn't it be nice if the Greek year was really a Jewish year? Wouldn't it be great if when we wrote the Greek year, I could cross my fingers and say it's a Jewish year? Not cross my fingers, draw an alpha. Okay? Wouldn't it be great if the Greek year began in year 1000 Tzitzit Mitzrayim? Wouldn't that be awesome? If it was true that the Greek year began in year 1000 Tzitzit Mitzrayim, then all I need to do is write the Greek year and add what? An alpha. And that's what the Gemara says that they used to do. That was a minhag of the Sofrim. They would write the Greek year and add an alpha. It was a nice minhag. Does it make sense to be a minhag like that? It would be a nice minhag to do. Because Chomesh counts Tzitzit Mitzrayim, that's how Bamidbar begins, the Rambam begins. When Shlomo builds the Mikdash and Sefer Melachim, we count Tzitzit Mitzrayim, don't we? Mm-hmm. We count months Tzitzit Mitzrayim, don't we? It's the best thing to do. Now, what's the problem? How am I going to turn the Greek year into Tzitzit Mitzrayim? So now look at the page I gave you, which says that with all the years. What Seder Olam did is so simple and so straightforward, it's as easy as could be. Okay, look what it says. Look in the A. See the missing years? So she too? Yeah, yeah. Yitzet Mitzrayim is year one. That's simple. There's a pasuk in Sefer Melachim Perek Vav. This thing, the word says A, the missing years. What says A? Flip it over. No, the page you have, that one, flip it over.
Okay.
Everyone have it? Where it says source sheet number two, missing years. What? Too many pages, I know. Yeah. Now, before 80, that's a pasuk that's before us. Just by chance, 12 times 40, but I'm sure that's coincidental. Now, there's 40, yeah, 40 comes up, 12, yeah. That can't be coincidental, but it's okay, it's for now. That's a pasuk, that's what counts. 480, before us. Now, how many years is it until the first base of Mikdash is destroyed? You can calculate that. Because Sefer Melachim goes out of its way to give you continuous chronology by telling you when every king... There's 19 kings, which 18 years overlap. And there's 428 years, so you count up to 18 years of overlap and you get to 410. You can do the cheshbon on your own, 410. Which brings us to your 890. Now, if you look in your Tanakh and Sefer Zecharia, the pasuk is there. Zecharia in Perek Aleph, there's this surseim with hadasim and things like that. It sounds like Miguel has said to me. But there's a vision there. And there's a prayer that Zecharia says. He says, "Ad matay lo terachem et arei Yerushalayim asher zamta zashivim shana." Zechariah is not making a prediction, he's making a statement. He says, "God, the temple has been destroyed for 70 years. We just broke ground. Make this happen." In Yertuv Daryavesh, as they break ground on the second temple, they're praying that this time it should work. And it's 7 years since it was destroyed. That means that what? It's 70 years from the 11th year of Tzidkiel until the second year of Dayavish. That's how they learned that there's 18 years from Koresh to Dayavish, because the temple is destroyed in the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar. So there's 18 years from the beginning of Yirmiyahu 70 till the first year of Koresh, and there's an 18-year difference between them. So from Koresh to Dayavish is 18 years. Sedron does the Cheshbon, it looks perfect, and it works with outside history as well. We're up to what? We're up to 960 now, right? Make sense? Now, then we have year 6 of Daryavash, right? And if I say Daryavash is Atachshasta, and if Daryavash is Atachshasta, how many years of Atachshasta are there? When the Chemni comes in year 20, comes back in year 32, and comes back 2 years later. So the last event in Tanakh is year 34 of Atachshasta. That's the last recorded event in Tanakh. What year are we up to? If Daryavash is Atachshasta, what year are we up to?
If you see a gap between 6 and
7. If there is no gap. I don't see a gap.
Following
Seder Olam. That is Seder Olam.
Right.
There's no gap.
Right.
What's that enable? Now Tanakh ends in what year? 994. Right, now, if they're different kings, I lose. If I'm over. No, when you play the kids play, you go, I can't win anymore. I lost the game. So, and therefore I'd rather say there is no gap. And then Tanakh ends in 994. I'm missing how many years? 6 years. Read Masechet Avodah Zarah Daf Yud. What did the rabbis say? The year after Tanakh ended, Alexander the Great came and captured Elam. And for the next years, he conquered all Paras and Madai. Got it? And after 6 years to count all Paras and Madai, that's when the Greeks started counting the years. That was year one of Binyan Shtarot. It's all Baba Maisis, you follow? There's no... It's just made up. There's no source for that at all. It doesn't matter. Greek history records exactly when Seder Olam began. It was 20 years later. It was in 312. We're talking about 320. But what they're saying that Alexander Great became the year Tanakh ended was Alexander the Great. There's hundreds of years in between. That, why? Because what's our goal? The Greek year has to be Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Now when they said that, they know it wasn't true. You follow? It's Midrash. The Midrash was written to turn the Greek year into a Jewish year, not to teach you history. Now, does it make sense they would do something like that? You can argue with it, you could have a fight in shul about it, but if someone came up with the idea, it's legit, isn't it? If someone very innovative says, "What? You know what? I can make the Greek year Jewish year. How do we do it? It's all my fingertips. What do I have? It's like Purim Torah almost, lahavdil, but good Purim Torah. Right? When you squeeze things in, what do you have? If Daryavish is our Takshasta, then I have 994. Where I put Achashverosh, I'll put him between Koresh and Daryavish. And he just squeezes right in there. Got it? Just makes it. And then Daryavish is the thing. I'm 994, I need 6 more years. So what do? I just erase the rest of Persian history. And everyone knew that Alexander the Great killed a king named Darius. It was Darius III. It's a famous story, there's Greek plays about it and stuff like that. Darius III was killed by Alexander the Great. That was like a big thing. But if the king killed back, it was Darius, and Darius is Artaxasta, and there's only one Darius who's Artaxasta, then who did Alexander the Great to kill? The same Daryavish, who's Artaxasta, is the one that Alexander the Great killed. That's what Seder Olam says. And then he says, when you finish that, here, take a look. Look in the Seder Olam page I gave you. Do you understand how we get to 1,000? We did 5 in Seder Olam, right? Ezra made the next year. Okay? Then we have Divrei Nechemiah ben Chalchiah, number 6. In the Seder Olam page. It has numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We did 5. 5 was the gap, but there's no gap. 6, and Ezra makes Aliyah in year 7. Nehemiah comes in year 20, okay? And then he was 12 years in the land, and then he comes back in year 32, another pasuk, and he stays after 2. Chichyamim, he says it's 2 years, okay? And then so Nehemiah is there from year 20 to 32 plus 2, okay? And therefore, what happens? There's only three Persian kings. Who are they? Because after that, what do you call it? Who's the three Persian kings? Koresh, Achashverosh, and Daryavish is Artaxasta. We just erased 200 years of Persian history. Got it? Like that. Yeah. And what's Elohu Koresh Daryavish? They're all called the same name. Okay? Basically, you can just call them anything you want, and they'll fit for anybody. That's an excuse, not a reason. But what's the goal? The goal is to turn the Greek year into a Jewish year. What's wrong with that? Now, when they said it, no one took it literally, because they knew it can't be. It doesn't fit the pshat of anything. When you say something so ridiculous in pshat, that's called drash. Yeah.
How do you know that they didn't really think this was history? What's your proof that they didn't?
Because I'm assuming they had common sense, and I'm assuming
archaeology. What does that mean?
But they had their own history. Listen, Josephus, you've heard of him, right? He writes the history. He knows all the history. He has it all written down. He doesn't say who. He identifies maybe a different Achashverosh, but he has 200 years of Persian kings. Because he has the Greek historians. The Romans have the Greek historians. The Romans know the Greek history because the Greeks wrote their history about the Persians. So they have it. So we know in the time of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, it's the time of Josephus, of Flavius, they knew the history. And those are the Tanaim who write Seder Olam. Yosef bar Chalafta is a generation afterwards. But in Beit Sheni, they know the real history. But I'm saying, but during Beit Sheni, they want the Greek year to be Jewish year. That's called Midrash. There's nothing wrong with Midrash. It's beautiful. But that's why it's called Midrash. But when a Midrash like that happens and you turn it into history, then you don't get the beauty of the Midrash, you don't get the beauty of the history. You go what's called Kerech Mikan or Mikan. I'm just giving a very logical reason why Seder Olam crunches the years. Besides the fact that Tanakh crunches the years, you follow? Because when nothing happened to rebuild Yerushalayim, by pretending nothing happened between chapter 6 and 7, when something should have happened, that's a message. Got it? mean, it's like ignoring a kid. That's a mitzvah you can give, and just ignore like he doesn't exist. I just totally wipe out that time period because nothing happened.
It's white space.
What? Yeah, just nothing happened. Now, we have a different tradition of history because we're historical and we're Greek. It was every year has to count and everything. But it said it has a different tradition of history. Now, when it was written, I'm assuming, I think it's logical to assume, that when they wrote it, they knew it wasn't true. But they're doing it to admit to the Greek and to the Jewish. That they did for sure. The minig, it's Masechet Avodah Zarah Daf Yud. The minig of the Sofrim was right minyan of the name, but they would add an alpha. And therefore the Jewish year is the Greek year.
Somebody some years ago took the same notion, but he thought the reason that Seder Olam crushed the years was intentionally to prevent...
So we wouldn't know when Mashiach's coming.
Yeah.
Then he had to retract it because it means Chazal are wrong. Because you can't say Chazal are wrong. I'm saying Chazal are right, but they're saying a good Midrash. Rav Schwab, yeah. Rav Schwab wrote the book on, Mitchell First wrote the whole thing on that.
Yeah.
But I'm giving a real logical reason. Now, how do we get to Briat Olam? It's as simple as could be. What's our year today? How do we get to 5780?
Yeah.
When did we start counting to Briat Olam? We never did. We always counted to what? We count the Greek year and we turn to a Jewish year. And we're using that all through the time of the Goanim. All of a sudden we move to Europe and we're under Christian rule. What do we do now? Why can't we use the Greek year anymore? Because the Goanim don't use the Greek year anymore. They don't. Why don't they? Because they don't. They have a new year, they have a new king. Remember your Christmas carols? There's a new king. They call it AD, we call it CE. But we use it because it's viral. Now it's going to write a check. It'll bounce if you write the Jewish year. Now, so what do? So, we can't use the Greek year anymore. Why? Because no one else is using the Greek year. I can't use the Goyish year because that's religious already, fellow. I can't write that on a ksuba. Okay, I can write maybe on Tanoim, you know, ask your local rabbi. You know, you can write the Greek Goyish year on the Goyish merit certificate. But on the ksuba, you're not going to write the Goyish year. What are you going to write? The Jewish year. But I can't write the Greek here because no one knows the Greek here. What could I do? I could add 1,000 and say they set me throwing. Because that's what I'm doing anyhow. But if I did that, I did nothing. Why? Because no one ever counts the thousands. Right? It's Tavshin Pei. It's Hey Tavshin Pei. Who? You knew that? Because no one, other than millennials, no one's living. No one uses the thousands when you count the years. You just do the hundreds. You know, if Am Yisrael kept on counting, If they went from the Greek year to Yitzhak Mitzrayim and added 1,000, they didn't do anything. I need to do something significant. I'm saying what happened. I'll tell you exactly what. You'll see what they did. It's as simple as can be.
Are there any evidence that in Jewish and heavily Arab Muslim areas they adopted the Muslim calendar?
No, I'm saying the Muslims used the Greek year also. Everyone used the Greek year. It's just they kept them going. The Romans took it over. Then Romans have a different calendar, but what?
Muslims on point started their own.
Yeah, they accept their own thing. Yeah, they have everyone. But everyone knew the Greek year. Because they kept on counting. But the Jews kept counting it for sure. Now, I can't just add I could have done 1,000, but then it's like the same thing. Someone came up with a great chop in the 10th, 11th century. What'd they do? Let's count now. We can't count to the Greek year. We already blew it, Yitzhak Mitzrayim, because Yitzhak Mitzrayim is a Greek year. So what do we do? Let's count to our creation. They count to the New Testament, we count to the Old Testament. Now, how am I going to turn the Greek year to a Jewish year, to Briat Olam? Well, how many years was it from Briat Olam until Avraham Avinu was born?
1948.
That's Yashkam Bina Torah Minayin. Uh-huh. You knew that, didn't you? That's on the page of the years. 1948. That you can calculate from Perek Hay in Yud Aleph and Breshit. Avraham was 100 when Yitzchak was born. 2048. That's a pasuk, yeah. And then when we leave Egypt, it's at least 400 years. In Peshat, I think it's 430. It's like way more than 400 years, but minimum 400 years. It can't be less than 400 years, even though in Peshat it's way more. If I say it's 400 years, when was Yitzhak Mitzrayim? In 2448. Now, if you want to take a pencil and add them up, take 2448. Anyone have a pencil?
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, take a calculator. Take 2448, which is the year of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Add 1,000, that would take you to what?
34.
35. And that's Minyan Shtarot now. That's the Greek year. That's the Greek year. Now it's Greek year 2332. We'll see in a minute. That's when the Greek year began. That's Minyan Shtarot. Minyan Shtarot started at -312. So add 312. to get to the AD, to the CE year. At 312. And then at 2020, which is the Goyish year. And what do you get?
Right, you lost us.
37, 60, and how much?
I did it. I don't know how I did it, but I did it.
No, I added 312, 37, 60, and then...
It's as simple as can be.
312.
What?
312. What?
What's the 312? Binyan Shtarot began at minus 312. Look in every history book, right?
2020 is 57.
The Greek year began at minus 312. They've been counting every year since then. Every year is recorded. Everyone knows. Look, just Google it. The Greek year began at minus 312. The Battle of Gaza. It's all recorded history. It's a Dabar Pashat. Now, so the Greek year today is the Goyish year plus 312. That was then. The Minyan Shtarot year today is 2020 plus 312, which is what? 2332. Simple math. Yitzhak Mitzrayim have to add 1,000. 3332. Add 2448 to 3332, and you get 5780. That's the judge. So it's, what do we do? We didn't start counting. We kept Minyan Shtarot. We just added 2448 to Minyan Shtarot to make it look different. But we're still keeping the Greek year, basically. That became Minyan Shtarot since the 11th century, 10th century. It's a beautiful Minyan, isn't it? Now, is it historically true? Of course not. But that's what we read in our Jewish documents. Now, I could possibly now every single Ksuban Matar every Aguna. Why? Because the date's wrong. It's the Pasul Star. No. They write, because what do we write in the Ksuba? Who's ever read a Ksuba? We read the Briat Olam. Now you're a lawyer, right? That's a legal clause to make sure, no matter, even if it's not historically true, but that's our convention, the Minyan Shonu Manim, because that's what we're doing. But that Minyan Shonu Manim is based on what? Our year 57A is based on three assumptions. One is that there's no gap between Perek Vav and Zayin, which is makes no sense at all. That from Yitzhak Mitzrayim, from the birth of Yitzchak to Yitzhak Mitzrayim is 400 years, which is more than, like in 200 years, we went from 70 to 600,000 men, which means we went to 2 million. That's wool. You follow? That's definitely not pshat. And it's also assuming that the year after Tzach ended, Alexander the Great came. And we just wiped out another 100 years of Persian history. All those assumptions are just don't make no sense at all. So in real history, we're way more than 6,000. It could be we added years where, you know, I don't know what. No one ever kept track from Briat Olam. Isaac Asimov says it was billions of years since Briat Olam. It could be. Yeah. But we have a. It's called Minag. It's a beautiful Minag. Now, here's what happened. Because of this Minag, to count to Briat Olam, which is based on Seder Olam, you follow? Then every Shtar now, since the 10th century, since the time of the Tanoim, I mean, since the time of the Rishonim, we use Briat Olam year. Briat Olam is built on Seder Olam, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, if I write on my star, it's 5780, then all the midrashim that support 5780, got it? Become history. And therefore, and it's so complicated this. You can't teach this to a little kid. No, it's educationally, you can't do that. So what do? You treat it like it became history. You follow what happened? The second we adopted one minhag, which is a beautiful minhag, To counter the Goyim, because they're counting to their God. We're part of our year, we have a Jewish year. And Briat Olam. But then all the calculations that Chazal use to get to 5780, or to get to 1,000, to turn the man short into a Jewish year, instead of becoming Midrash, they become real history. And therefore, every textbook is Esther is the son of, I mean, Darius is the son of Esther. And the party you follow? And there is no gap. And who died? It's all through the Gemara, because by the time you get to the Amoraim, Seder Olam becomes Jewish history. Now, it's clearly, by the time you get to the Amoraim and the Rishonim and the Gaonim, they take everything literally, like you said, because they don't know the outside history. And the minig of not learning Tanakh already started catching on then already. But then no one studies Ezra Nehemiah and does the years, does things like that.
But they know
Midrash. And they know Seder Olam, because that's a Blaita. Now, from an educational point of view, I can't teach the Rabbi Elizabeth, there's Rishonim who write about this. But they were put in Cherem. Because it's education, it's a disaster educationally. You follow why?
Yes.
Because kids can't buy this. You follow?
Yes.
What do you mean? It's not the real Jewish year. You can't educate that way. So you hide it. you hide it and you hope no one finds out. But you can't do that anymore because everyone can Google anything. So now we have an education. Understand my educational dilemma? Hey, yes. I'm trying to appreciate Chazal and say, I don't want to say Chazal are wrong, they're right. But I'm trying to understand why They write what they write. You understand? That's midrash, not pshat. That they understand now why their midrashic interpretation, why they did it, and why it turned into real history for educational reasons, which are historical. But once it caught on, it became Jewish education. And once everyone's teaching that way, I can't change that overnight. And then I'm stuck with, you know, with what I did. I cooked them that week like that. Nowadays, so you can insulate. Don't go to college, don't read, you follow? And call that Kfirah. That's what they did for Elizabeth. Then any Rishon who brought this up, there were Rishonim who said all this. They said they can't be the right years. Mitchell First has all the different opinions in his book. You have timelines that say Bayit Sheni from minus 586, from minus 516 to plus 70. On the bottom it says 420 years. I've seen timelines that have the Goyisha date on top.
Our girl just called Korban Bayis Rishon 420 without a hint that nobody else thinks that.
Yeah, yeah. It's just standard Jewish history.
It was a moon.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. But nowadays you have an educational dilemma. Do I just follow what we've been doing for all these years? Or now, because our kids, you can't hide this anymore. How much can you insulate nowadays?
An asterisk and explain it.
What? Now you have to come and explain it. But that's a watershed event in Jewish education. But then you have an educational dilemma. What do you teach? You follow? So I can just ignore it, just say, you know, you have to have a munah. That's one approach. One is you can try to understand. That's what the goal is here, to try to understand what they did.
Say that last thing again.
I'm saying art, nowadays we have an educational dilemma of how to deal with that problem. Because when you look at the outside history, it's so obvious, not just, like you said, the internal Tanakh doesn't match Seder Olam. The outside history follows Tanakh beautifully, but doesn't match Seder Olam at all. And then the question is, do I bang my head against the wall and say, the rabbis know infinite knowledge, and who cares about what the historians say? And who cares if I have two different graves for Dayavish and Artakshasta? Right? And what do you call it? Who cares that I built graves of all these kings and all their things? They're just doing they're out to get us to going to mess us up. But Seder Olam is 100% right because the Gemara quotes it. Right? Or do I say, what's the reason why they wrote Seder Olam? Give a very logical reason why they did that. And then I appreciate the Midrash and then understand why there's this syrup in outside history. And it's explainable. But to do that, you have to educate people. That's not easy nowadays.
And archaeology.
It's based on Emunas Chachamim of that. So that's an educational challenge of what you teach. And I'm troubled by that. Because if I don't teach it, it's not good. But if I do teach it, it's even worse. That's my educational dilemma. But I think because of how we're living nowadays, and there's so much information out there, if you don't teach it, it's more important to teach it. You're taking risk of teaching it. You're taking risk of not teaching it.
What? Generations of people who can't reconcile.
Who can't reconcile? Then they say, "Well, the rabbis are wrong in their history. They're wrong in halacha." And then we have half Shabbos and then no Shabbos.
Yeah, but that's the rabbi. Yeah. You know,
and they'll think it's okay to stay in America when God's bringing redemption. No, you make your own conclusion. Something's under stake. Yeah. But by the way, the goal isn't to move to Israel. The goal is to be worthy of Gula. Because if you come to Israel and do the same mess again, that's even worse. You follow? And that's Satmar, and they're 100% right. There's no point in coming back if you're not going to be God's people and act the right way. And if we play that Sinas Chinam game, what do you gain by coming back and making a mockery of Judaism again? So the message isn't you have to make Aliyah. The message is you have to listen to Zecharia and let Mishpat Shalom Shifta B'Sharichem. But that's much harder than making Aliyah. Yeah.
Tell me, it's pretty complicated, interesting. Tell me, in a very simple way, what are the internal, how does Tanakh show that Seder Olam Rabbah is wrong? I know how the history shows.
When you study Ezra, study the book. Does it make sense that when Ezra makes Aliyah, if it's the next year, that he doesn't meet Haggai, he doesn't meet Zechariah, he doesn't meet Zerubbabel, he doesn't meet Yeshua, all the big leaders, he meets their grandchildren.
And we know he meets their grandchildren.
Yeah, there's El Yashiv, the Kohen Gadol, there's all these people he meets. And Nehemiah's screaming at people and yelling at people.
And we know El Yashiv, which is the grandson of.
There's Chilul Shabbat, the marketplaces are open. There's mass intermarriage. In the second year of Dayavish, the Jews and the Goyim don't talk to each other. They hate each other, right? There's no intermarriage, there's no time for intermarriage. But when Ezra comes, everyone's intermarried, including the leaders, including the Kohen Gadol's kids. No, it can't happen in the next year. You could force it, but it just doesn't make sense. It's the next year.
So besides putting history aside,
yeah,
right. What in Tanakh shows that
common sense? Just
right. It's the gap in the two. The fact that the two prophets
and the fact that Dayabish and two different names
and different dates.
What? No, not yet. It's on still. It's still on, yeah.
At a certain point, just remember to turn it off.
Oh, I'll turn off now, okay. Yeah.
I'm Debbie Glubchik, Moshe Glubchik.
Oh, Moshe, Moshe Glubchik.
One of your channel.
Yeah, yeah.
I promised him I would come
and say hi. Okay, good.
Say hello. Thank you.
Are you going to be in Lombano tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you very much.
Okay, sure.
Right, so it's the gap, the dates, and the fact that
we have... Was that mundane? Was that me turn this off? Off. The